Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
So good to be here with you. Okay. Is this okay? You can hear me? It's funny. I wrote that song a while ago. It's been almost 7 years or so that I wrote it, and I had no idea how deeply I would sink into that experience of awe and gratitude. And what I love about life is that it keeps giving us opportunities. When we think we know something, doors keep opening to show us how much more there is to know and feel about this extraordinary privilege, miraculous privilege, of being alive and encased in these amazing bodies comprised of nearly 100 trillion cells. So let's just breathe for a moment to take that in. Let's breathe in and breathe out. Let's breathe in again. Deeply exhale. Now, as each one of us just breathed, our chest expanded, our diaphragms lowered, air moved in through either our nose or mouth, moved down the windpipe, rushed into our lungs, filled the alveoli, which then transferred oxygen into our bloodstream. And in that bloodstream, our hemoglobin contains iron from a star that burst over a billion years ago in some distant galaxy. And now that iron is in our blood, carrying oxygen nearly 60,000 miles length of our circulatory system. Now, 60,000 miles is what we contain in our bodies and our circulatory system. And that's further than going from here to the moon and back. So while we were just sitting here, our blood is going to the moon and back on our behalf. Talk about love and awe. And it just starts there, really. Because as soon as we exhaled, the carbon dioxide we exhaled intermingled with plants and trees, which then absorbed it, reconverted it back into oxygen, emitted it back into the air. And this air, kind of like a silvery thread, spins this precious atmospheric womb through an amazing interplay of convection currents that just wrap themselves around this precious planet of ours. And this precious planet of ours is gravitating around the sun right now at just the perfect distance to allow life as we know it to thrive. Any closer and we would burn up. A hair further and our planet would be a cold, dark, icy, uninhabitable mass. But it's not. It's extraordinary. And there's a perfection and a coherence, a cooperation, a collaboration of elements that is so mind-bogglingly complex and perfect. And it's all happening all the time. And meanwhile, we can be focused on our hangnail or our mortgage payment or the fact that we can't find parking or that it's raining and it's too far and there's gay pride today and how am I going to get to where I'm supposed to be? And good and complex all at once. What happens, though, when this mind-boggling perfection and cooperation and collaboration is eclipsed by an experience of chaos, of challenge, of heartbreak, of disease? And that's what I'm here to talk to you about today. It was just a little over 3.5 years ago that I was diagnosed with cancer. Now, nobody ever really expects a cancer diagnosis, but I really did not expect it. I was the poster girl of healthy living. My parents had been organic farmers in Venezuela, so I grew up eating organic fresh whole foods. My mother was a yoga teacher, so I'd been practicing yoga since I was a little kid. I did what I loved. I was earning my living as a musician, which is my passion. And yet there I was with a cancer diagnosis. And it was a pretty hairy one, too. It all came to a head one day. It was May 11th of 2011. And I had a recording session in Sausalito, which is across the bay, San Francisco Bay. And Lisa and I had been touring quite a lot. And for about 5 or 6 months, I hadn't been feeling very well. But there was nothing immediate that I could point to. There was not a lump or anything. I was not feeling very good. And mind over matter, you know. I was like, okay, if I'm not feeling well, I just focus on wealth and I just focus on health and wellness, and I'll do another cleanse. I'll do this. And I was just, I had a lifetime of being so independent and self-sufficient and capable and strong. I wasn't going to let not feeling well get in my way. So that morning that I was driving over to my recording session, I dressed up and I headed down the stairs to the car, and Lisa looked at me and she said, "You really don't look well. Can I drive you?" And I was like, "No, I can drive myself." My whole life had been sort of based on this sense that my value, part of my value, depended on my autonomy and my capacity to be independent and, you know, pick myself up by my own bootstraps. And so it was like, no, don't drive me. I can drive myself. Thank you very much. So it was a beautiful day. I drove over the bridge, sparkling water, feeling really bad. Got to the other side in Sausalito, opened the door to walk up to the recording studio, and I had to muster every last ounce of energy and focus I could just to get out of the car. And I did. I breathed, I opened the door, I stepped out, and as I made my way to the recording studio, everything got very blurry, and I felt very dizzy and felt very dizzy, and I passed out. And I'd never fainted before, and I don't know if you all have ever fainted, but in my particular case at that moment, I went into dream time. And there in my dream time, I was back on the bridge driving. And my hands were clutching the steering wheel, and I was so focused to get to the other side, and I felt like my whole life depended on my capacity to stay focused so that I could keep control of my car. And I heard my voice being called, and I was upset by the disturbance, the interruption. It was like I needed to stay focused and stay in control to get my car across the bay to the other side. And this voice kept insisting, and I kept rejecting it, knowing that I had to stay in control in order to stay safe, because I was driving, after all. But that voice kept insisting, and somehow in this dreamtime moment, I let go of the steering wheel, followed the voice, and it was the engineer trying to wake me up. So I regained consciousness, and what happened is that I had to let go in order to wake up. And that was the first step of my healing. The paramedics arrived in a flurry of efficiency. I had EEG monitors all over my front and back, and they said my heart was okay, and did I want to go to the hospital at that moment? And I said, no, I'm okay. Lisa, I did the recording session, and then I called Lisa, and I said, this is what's happened. And she said, I'm coming over to pick you up. Enough is enough. So within 2 days, I was diagnosed with two massive ovarian tumors, one the size of a large melon and one the size of a mango. And I grew up in Venezuela, so mangoes were something that I could relate to. But also shortly thereafter, they determined that I had a collection of innumerable pulmonary embolisms and blood clots that had arisen as a result of the cancer. And because of that, doctors gave me a 3% chance of survival. Now, I learned later, I love this, 75% of all statistics are made up. So I love that one. It was interesting because cancer hadn't really been in my consciousness at that point. I didn't have any immediate friends or family who had suffered from cancer. But from one day to the next, all I kept seeing and reading and hearing was about the war on cancer, the battle on cancer. But what I knew for sure was that in order to heal, my body could not be a battleground. So Lisa and I had been very steeped in the poetry of Rumi, and there was a line that he said that really rang true and rang very deeply for me at that moment. Rumi says, "Find the antidote in the venom. Find the antidote in the venom." And what I knew also as a metaphysician is that the divine is present everywhere and everything at all times, no exceptions. So there was something divine in those tumors that was there to reveal a higher level of consciousness for me. So I did seek to find the antidote in the venom, and I went straight into the tumors to ask them. And I had never done anything like this before, but in meditation, I went and I asked them, "What are you here? What are you holding? How did this imbalance happen? What are you containing that I need to release?" And I was astounded at the speed with which the information emerged. Despair and mistrust. Despair and mistrust. And I was shocked by despair and mistrust in hearing that, because I thought I was a very trusting individual. I was very confident. I felt like a very positive person. And initially, it was like mistrust and despair. What? But simply in asking what, it was like this trapdoor opened from my heart, and there was all this despair and mistrust that poured forth. And what I realized was that from my earliest knowings, I felt like I came onto the planet to be an agent of good, to be an ambassador of kindness. But somewhere along the line, I didn't trust the world to be kind or good in return. And so I'd put up this shield, this protective armor around me, and there was this tremendous imbalance because I was putting goodness and kindness out in the world, but I was shielding myself. I was shielding myself from receiving anything back. And that imbalance created a deep sense of despair. So as soon as I recognized despair and mistrust, I knew that that is where the healing needed to start, that in fact it was a breakdown in relationship. Now, I was so sick, and it was amazing how quickly things accelerated from that first moment of fainting. I fainted several more times, paramedics, emergency ambulance, to the hospital. Eventually, I was just in the hospital waiting for surgery. And while I was there, it was very difficult for me to breathe because my lungs and my abdomen were so filled with fluid. And I couldn't walk at all. My body was so swollen. It was kind of funny, really, and surreal. And I think the fact that it was so surreal helped me open up to a different level of consciousness, because my body, which had always been, I mean, I was a triathlete, a runner, a yogini. My body was an amazing instrument, and here it was. Literally, I felt like a beached whale. I couldn't fit into men's large pajama bottoms. I was so swollen. And because of that, I also couldn't walk. So in that tremendous vulnerability, I had no choice. I had to ask for help and receive help. I couldn't move. This big, amazing nurse named Ramon. And Ramon was big, and bless his beautiful heart, because he was able to lift me when I couldn't. I literally could not move. So there in the hospital room, with the bed inclined, because if I were laying down, I would suffocate on the fluid in my lungs, I just went into this profound meditation of gratitude. And it was tremendously comforting and transformational. And I hadn't really thought about it, but I just started doing it. I started noticing everything that was going right. Because even though I couldn't breathe or I couldn't move, every time I opened my mouth to find air, it was there. There was an abundance of fresh air for me to breathe always. There was a skin on my body that held my organs in. My nose worked. My ears were okay. My hair was still on my head. I found myself for hours going through this process of gratitude. Gratitude for every single bone in my body. Gratitude for the mitochondria at the heart of the cells that was transferring energy. I was grateful for the Eiffel Tower. I was grateful for Van Gogh's sunflowers. I was grateful for Nelson Mandela. I was grateful for darkness. I was grateful for light. I was grateful for the cyclists. I remember seeing people on their bicycles, and I used to love to ride bikes, and I couldn't at that time, but I was so happy that they were riding bikes, because their riding bikes meant that their consciousness was connected to mine, and in that human experience, I too got to delight in what it was to ride a bicycle. So in gratitude, I expanded from the small separateness of myself into this expanded knowing of life and goodness. And I went on for hours. I was grateful for Da Vinci, for Dr. Martin Luther King. I was grateful for Harriet Tubman. I was grateful for George O'Keefe's flowers. Hours and hours steeped in the profound gratitude of what it was to be alive in this collective experience of humanity. Now, the thing, too, about cancer and understanding it, you know, that notion of finding the antidote in the venom. What was the venom? What is cancer? Cancer is a chaotic proliferation of cells that do not serve the whole. They take without giving. They consume without serving. There's a breakdown in coherence. There's essentially a breakdown in relationship. So understanding chaos, what's that about? Now, the thing about chaos is that it exists in every natural system. It's part of a dynamic structure of life. Chaos isn't bad. For any system to change, it must go through a period of chaos. Now, what happens is it either collapses, and that's the end of it, or it reorders at a higher level of functioning. And that's just nature. It's not good or bad. It's not positive or negative. It just is. So I thought about this cancer in my body as an invitation. It was evolve or die. But really, it wasn't so much of an invitation or a suggestion. It was really an ultimatum: evolve or die. And the paradox in that was that part of me had to die in order to evolve. And the part of me that had to die, the part of me that I had to shed and release, were those old ideas and beliefs, those structures I held in my subconscious infrastructure that was keeping me into an antiquated and smaller sense of what my humanity comprised. So there was surrender. There was gratitude. And now this idea of evolving, of dying to an old way of being and ascending into a higher expression of consciousness. Now, Einstein says, you can't solve a problem using the same level of thinking that created it. That makes sense, right? And it's really, I get it. But the deeper question, well, how? How do I change my way of thinking in order to up-level my consciousness? Especially when a lot of that thinking is subconscious, like when a lot of my regular thoughts and beliefs are just patterned habitually from a subconscious structure. So I championed the power of metaphor. Now, metaphor is a beautiful thing because it's a way of understanding the world, and in that particular case, my environment and my experience through a whole new lens, a lens that was much more dimensional and less logical and linear. So what happened, for example, was as I started losing all my hair as a result of the chemotherapy, instead of seeing it as evidence of sickness, I thought, okay, I always thought I'd be a monk, like and now my baldness is just testament of the fact that I'm on a spiritual journey, that this is my time for spiritual deepening. And that was good. And then I lost everything. I lost my eyebrows and my eyelashes. And that last little eyelash, it's a really curious thing to see one's face, my face, with no hair, nothing. I felt it was very fetal. Like I imagined looking myself at myself. You know those photos of in the womb photography when you see the little forming fetus? That's what I felt like. And so the power of metaphor in that instance for me was, I am rebirthing. I am getting to reincarnate in my life. And I laughed without having to go through seventh grade again. Which was great. So instead of seeing myself as sick and deathly, it was like, no, this is me getting to be born again. Start fresh, but from a whole nother level of knowing and wisdom. I also, you know, there's the caterpillar into a butterfly. I felt like my old self was completely liquefying. I couldn't do anything that I had ever done before. Like when I was back home, it was so funny. I mean, I used to run 17 miles, 18 miles, 20 miles, you know, and to take 10 steps was equivalent to crossing that finish line at a marathon. It gave me such a sense of accomplishment and joy. Everything shifted. And in that shift, I did feel like, okay, that old self of mine is liquefying and I'm transforming and emerging a butterfly. Beautiful. And that was like just within the confines of my own body. But then in relationship to the world around me, I kept inviting the notion of metaphor to help me ascend and expand my consciousness. So it was really, it was curious. The landlord was doing a power washing of the front of our house. And so it was, there I was in bed and it was like, power. And I thought, okay, that power wash is going on inside of me right now. Anything that is not like love and joy and wholeness and perfection is getting washed out. That power washer's doing it right now. Across the street, the house was being renovated completely from the ground up. And so there were hammers and buzz saws, and it was like a lot of noise from 8 until 5. But there I was lying in my bed, delighting in that, imagining that that reconstruction, that renovation, that renewal out there was actually just an outpicturing of what was going on in my own body. Metaphor was a profound way to expand my experience outside of the smallness of, why is this happening to me? To, wow, let me grow my understanding of this experience as a deepening, an expansion, an opportunity to up-level my consciousness. With that, too, was the whole sense of purpose. I know initially I was trying to understand, okay, I've lived this healthy life. Why did this happen to me? Not out of a place of victimhood or guilt or whatever, but it was more like, I just want to understand. And then when I turned it around and I shifted it to purpose, well, what's the purpose in this? It was very empowering to think, well, it just, I happen to maybe have chosen it because in my purposefulness, I'm taking one for the team. My healing and transformation isn't just about the smallness of myself, but I'm doing this for everybody. I'm doing this for my grandmothers before me and for my nieces and my girlfriends and my nieces, my nephews, the whole world. If I can see the shift in my consciousness as part of something that is upleveling the whole of humanity, how much energy is there in that? There's endless fuel and support when I was able to put purpose behind my challenge. Now, none of us ever knows how we're going to die. We all are going to. And in that, we know that what really matters is how we live. But still, there's the looming question of, well, how is that going to happen? Am I going to be awake when I die? Am I going to be conscious? What am I going to be thinking of when I die? Or if I'm going to be thinking at all? And the remarkable thing was, I was given that opportunity. It was about 2 weeks, 10 days, I think, after surgery when I went in to have the staples removed. And while we were in there, I felt a really sharp pain in my chest, and I told the attending physician, who was very alarmed because of the prevalence of all these pulmonary embolisms. She was afraid one of them had breached this filter that had been placed in my inferior vena cava. And in that instance, I would have approximately 30 minutes to live. It's kind of timeless, really. They rushed us to the emergency room, Lisa there by my side. And like everything at that point, it was very surreal. Went right past the triage nurse, do not stop, pass, go, whatever, collect $100. It was direct into the back room. And there I was, lying on the gurney in this very small, sterile, white space. And what was clear is that so many of the things that I thought may have been important in defining who I was, the achievements, the accomplishments, whatever accumulation of possession, it didn't matter. None of that matters. The only thing that was clear was that what matters and what we're here for is love. We didn't say anything. We just looked at each other and volumes of information passed between us. And what's important is that when I say the only thing that matters is love, often we think of love as this sentimentality, like the romantic love. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about love as the connection, that field of energy that unites us all. It's not about me or you, but the space between the two. It's the wholeness from which all of this magnificent expression of life springs. As we move through our lives, and I know as I did, and my little ego self was off doing what it was doing, and in the genuine, sincere, authentic way of I'm here doing good, doing my life. But love is a thing that is greater than that sense of me, greater than that understanding of you. Love is that magnetic field that holds us all in divine wholeness, unity, sacred one, that one from which we all Spring, come forth, create, emerge. So I ask you, what in your life? In my case, it's cancer. And frankly, cancer is really boring to me. It's like cancer schmancer. But it's really about the call to up-level consciousness. It's about how is chaos presenting in your life? Is it through a broken heart? Is it through financial challenge? Is it through a hard relationship with your mother, your child? How is chaos expressing itself only to call you, to call each one of us to a higher level of functioning, a higher level of consciousness? Because what we know for certain right now on the planet is that our consciousness is being called to awaken. That's what we're here for, an awakening, a recognition that we're not here by ourselves as separate entities, but we are here in a collective expression of love and life force. The planet depends on our awakening. We depend on our awakening. We depend on each other. So surrender. Feel immersed in sincere and authentic gratitude. Open up to metaphor as a pathway to understanding a broader, more dimensional framework of whatever difficulty or challenge you are experiencing. Find purpose in it. Find the most simple purpose that as each one of us up-levels our consciousness, as we awaken, we become active agents in the up-leveling of humanity. It's not just a singular journey. It's a collective rising. And lastly, love. Love. Understand that it's not just about a singular experience, that as we love, we expand and we become far greater vessels for the divine expression that is seeking to move through us. Love. Our lives depend on it. Thank you.
Etika, thank you for that beautiful, beautiful metaphor. Giant metaphor. She touched on so many things, and I'd like to bring it all together with a treatment, a prayer, a meditation here in just a moment. But I couldn't help but reflect as she talked about the oneness and the health and things working together, what's going on in the city right now, all the wonderful events going on with Pride that are not being dampened at all by the rain. Everybody's having a beautiful time. Last night, late yesterday afternoon, I had the great honor of going down to Palmetto, which is now called Chattahoochee Hills, down near Serenbee, and perform the wedding for Lisa Bianco and Cindy Ford, very dear friends for a long time, and with children and people on their farm, at their home. And it was truly a marvelous experience, seeing that diversity. So in many ways, even though she didn't mention the word, that's a lot of what Etika is talking about. It's, as Emerson said, infinite variety being expressed as unity, as oneness. All the color and the differences in so many different ways, all of it connected and working beautifully together, just like our physical body. So I invite you to join with me now. Take a breath. And let us recognize with gratitude and awe towards this beautiful story, recognize that awareness is the first step of healing. And that awareness is not awareness of our situation or our surroundings. It is an awareness of God, an awareness of love, an awareness of truth. So as we open our mind and focus within, we become aware with awe
of this amazing physical form that we have. And we recognize that as within, so without. Just as every cell of our body is working with every other cell, we recognize that we are one cell of the human body. Every one of us important. Every one of us spiritually created with a soul and spirit within our physical form that allows us to function not just on a day-to-day going to work basis, but to function in a way where we join with others simply by appreciating them, respecting them, honoring them, and loving them. As we join with all the people in our community, not just our neighborhood or this center or this city, but the community of the world. And we honor our place, and we honor the place of everyone here. And as we do this, we recognize that the chaos that appears so often is so unnecessary. But we also recognize that the chaos is part of the order. That's how we grow. We know that something is destroyed every time something is created. But when that which is created is something that comes more from the spiritual part of us or the spiritual part of humanity, what is created, what follows, is more powerful, more expanded, more open than anything that came before. So we allow the metaphor of our physical body working together and our mind expanding and our heart opening. That metaphor shows that our physical body can heal. We don't just heal disease. We don't just heal disruption or chaos within our body. We heal our spirit. And we heal it by recognizing that it needs no healing, that our spirit is healthy and whole and wants to reflect in, as, and through us in the best possible way all the time. So after awareness comes allowing. We allow that spiritual part of us to come forward. We allow it to touch every part of our life, every person we meet, everything we do, everything we create. We allow it to come forward, and we smile, and we go along for the ride. In this way, we change ourselves on the outside and allow ourselves to become more of what we truly are within. This is the truth. We recognize this. We are grateful for one another. We're grateful for this beautiful world, for these amazing bodies. We are grateful, 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 as Etika spoke of. And knowing this, we allow this to become the truth in every moment of our life. With every fiber of our being, everywhere we go, and everything we do, this is the truth. We accept it and release it, and so it is.